This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Now there is a risk of contamination of water, and if that is not handled well, then we are going to risk another phase of a challenge, an outbreak of cholera, which will compound our humanitarian intervention.
That's Musa Ekweru, Uganda State Minister, on the possibility of waterborne disease outbreaks in flood-affected areas. Details coming up also. International rights groups and some U.S. politicians are calling on Nigerian authorities to immediately release opposition activist and journalist Omeyele Sowore. And Miss South Africa was crowned Miss Universe yesterday in the U.S. city of Atlanta. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Ugandan authorities say the death toll from a week of floods and mudslides has risen to 36 people and left thousands stranded after heavy rain swept across a mountainous region. Halima Tumani reports from Kampala.
A week of heavy rains caused floods and mudslides in eastern Uganda's Bugisu and Bundibugyo regions near Rwenzori Mountain. Authorities say the flooding has taken a toll with the loss of life and property, and with thousands more left stranded. The Ugandan Red Cross's Irene Nakasita says search and rescue operations in the regions are hampered as most roads have been washed away.
And the decision has been taken to put up a transit shelter until the situation normalizes. So most likely, Bubukwang Transit Center is going to house close to 700 people who are displaced in Bundibugyo.
Meanwhile, Uganda's State Minister for Disaster Preparedness and Relief, Musa Ekweru, says there are concerns about waterborne disease outbreaks in flood-affected areas.
Now there is a risk of contamination of water, and if that is not handled well, then we are going to risk another phase of a challenge, an outbreak of cholera, which will compound our humanitarian intervention.
Ekweru says the government has released $5.4 million for emergency drugs to treat waterborne diseases, inflatable boats, taps, blankets, food, and repairing bridges. Ugandan authorities say the flooding is expected to recede in January as the weather improves. Scientists have long warned that rising ocean temperatures are making seasonal rains more severe and more frequent. The United Nations Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, UN OCHA, last week, December 4th, said unusually heavy rainfall and flooding in East Africa has affected over 2.8 million people and left at least 280 dead. UN OCHA said the unusually heavy rainfall was driven by the differences in sea surface temperature between western and eastern areas of the Indian Ocean. The UN office said rains were expected to diminish in the weeks ahead, but heavy rains would likely persist into December and intensify in Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
Experts say deteriorating security and growing violence in the Sahel region has combined with drought to worsen the hunger crisis in the 16 countries. They say the number of people requiring urgent food aid in the region more than doubled this year to some 9.4 million, with Nigeria, Niger, and Burkina Faso hit the hardest. At the current rate, the number of people in crisis is expected to grow to 14.4 million by June through August, including 1.2 million in emergency conditions. The vast expanse of the Sahel along the southern rim of the Sahara is extremely vulnerable to drought, even as birth rates surge across the region. Activists say Kenya's remote island of Lamu, a UNESCO World Heritage Site, is under threat. Authorities are constructing major projects on the mainland, including a port and an oil pipeline. They also hope to build the region's first coal-fired power plant. While the infrastructure is likely to boost the local economy, some Lamu residents worry the development and the migration of outsiders will affect the local culture and the architecture, which some say is already falling apart. Ruud Elmendorp reports from Lamu.
We're in the narrow streets of Lamu in Kenya, where cars don't fit and donkeys are the main mode of transport. The remoteness of the island has helped maintain its 650-year-old Swahili culture and traditions. But locals worry construction of a new port, oil pipeline and transport links on the mainland will bring more outsiders to settle in Lamu and change the unique culture. Abu Bakr Badawi is with the century-old Riada Mosque.
We are trying our best to prevent that kind of intervention or sort of the kind of new development so that we can preserve the Lamu.
Authorities say the 26 billion group of projects will improve economic links between Kenya, South Sudan and Ethiopia and create thousands of jobs. But a Kenyan court in June halted construction of a coal-fired power plant that was to help fuel the projects, encouraging opponents. Raya Famau Ahmed is an activist opposed to the coal plant.
We as Lamu people are afraid because when people come from other areas, they come with many things. Their own language, their own culture, I mean their own way of living. And this might alter the cultural way that people have been living.
Activists worry the projects could also affect Lamu town's unique antique character. More than a third of Lamu's historic buildings are already falling apart, says Athman Hussein of the National Museums of Kenya.
Some of the owners do not want any kind of intervention. They think perhaps by putting money into their building, perhaps you are actually owning it, you are taking over that particular building. So it's a very complex kind of thing.
Lamu authorities vow they will protect the island's world heritage from the development projects. Fahima Arafat is with the Lamu County government.
We have also put measures to ensure that the lapset activities will remain on the mainland of Lamu, that is Hindi area, Mokowe and the likes. And that's the Lamu Archipelago, that is Lamu Island, starting from Shela all the way to Kipungani, remains with its status of heritage.
Lamu authorities say they are raising funds to help renovate historic buildings and develop the economy with tourism as a major pillar. At the risk of commercializing their culture, some argue that bringing in more tourists may actually help keep Lamu's unique traditions alive. Ruud Elmendorp for VOA News, Lamu, Kenya.
Zimbabwe's water problems are escalating amid a grinding drought which has left millions food insecure and resulted in the deaths of thousands of animals. Arigando gives us more on the story from Bulawayo.
Bulawayo's water woes are set to worsen after the local authority decommissioned the Umzingwane Dam a few days ago. In June, Bulawayo City Council BCC decommissioned the Upper Nema Dam and the local authorities now left with four supply dams instead of the normal of six. And the four dams are just 36% full. The City Council says it continues to face challenges with pumping due to electricity cuts. Earlier on, the City Council introduced 72-hour water cuts for most of the city. Mandla Chuma, a resident of Mganwini Township in Bulawayo's western area, vents his frustration.
We are supposed to be having 4 days without water. In terms of water shedding, what I can say is that we no longer pay attention to whatever City Council tells us in terms of the days when they're going to be shedding. So all we do is to wake up early in the morning, open the tap to see if there's running water. So what happens now, I just use a 2-liter container to do my bathing because it can go even for days. The whole week, most of the time, there will be no water.
Chuma says residents used to rely on tanks or bowser supplied by council, which have gone dry. Now they've had to rely on alternative sources.
But at the boreholes there's overcrowding. People can queue for water in the morning up to 10 p.m. So the situation is so dire. We don't know what happened to their bowsers. Before they used to bring bowsers, but I have never seen them for quite some time.
Zimbabwe's economy has declined sharply in the past 2 years. The country faces shortages of currency, fuel, and imported goods such as medicine and machinery. The prolonged drought has added to the problems, particularly because the country relies on hydropower for much of its electricity, and in some areas, rivers are too low to power turbines. The city council warns residents and stakeholders that the decommissioning of Umzingwane will cut the flow of raw water to 95 megaliters a day. That's against the current daily average consumption of 131.6 megaliters. While council has said that companies in the industrial areas have been spared the water cuts, business owners report their taps are running dry. Ernest Marima, a business operator in Entumbane Township, says something urgent needs to be done.
We have to rely on Bowser water and borrow water from elsewhere. So I would say it makes it more expensive to run the same business.
Marima thinks the solution needs to be a national one through the Zimbabwe National Water Authority, ZINWA, which has the mandate to sustainably develop and manage the country's water resources.
What needs to happen is to pump water from Nyamandlovu. It's a rainy season now, so the water table will go up, the dams will get a bit of water. It pumps it straight into your reservoir. That Magwegwe Reservoir up there, Magwegwe Reservoir, pump into that place.
ZINWA also runs 534 treatment plants that supply potable water to small towns, rural service stations, and growth points. It has been cash-strapped due to the economic downturn. The national authority did not respond to requests for comment. For now, council says it is working to increase the pumping from the Nyamandlovu boreholes and for the Zimbabwe Electricity Transmission Distribution Company to speed up the reinstallation of power lines that were blown down by storm winds 2 weeks ago. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigonda.
Zimbabwe has a long history of human rights abuses, but the government of President Emmerson Mnangagwa pledged change after the ouster of longtime ruler Robert Mugabe. 2 years later, rights activists say that promise has not been carried out. Reporter Kuzaza Nwashi has the details.
When Robert Mugabe was forced from the presidency in 2017, after nearly 4 decades at the helm, rights activists hoped his brutal legacy would die. Political analyst Rashid Mukundu, however, says Zimbabwe's human rights performance has not improved much since then.
In all fairness, Zimbabwe is much worse in terms of the human rights situation. Not only are we seeing the use of trigger happy police and the military in abusing human rights, especially citizens attempting to express themselves.
Not long after Mukundu made his comments, police were accused of a series of abuses, some involving journalists and lawyers. Police also barred an opposition leader from presiding over a tree planting event. Gunshots were fired as police enforced their ban. Mukundu says the problem is widespread.
We are also seeing the closing of not only civic space but also the political space. Essentially, the main opposition party in Zimbabwe is banned even without an official statement to that effect. Above that, rights related to social services have essentially collapsed. Look at the health sector, look at the education sector, look at supply of water, look at supply of electricity.
Zimbabwe's economy is declining rapidly, and the country suffers from triple-digit inflation and shortages of cash, food, fuel, and medication. Its power and water supply systems are faltering, making it difficult to conduct business. Munyara Dzidodo is the editor of Open Pali, an online publication that covers parliament business and political developments in Zimbabwe. He says not even journalists are safe in Zimbabwe.
The situation has been deteriorating gradually over the past year, and you've seen an increase in police crackdown on activists, even comedians, protesters. You've seen that the space has shrunk. There's been a crackdown on journalists who've been trying to cover these different stories. Our journalists as Open Parley have been attacked as well by police.
Deputy Minister of Information Energy Mutodi rejects allegations that the country's human rights record is worsening.
We have just acted normally, like any democratic state. There is no country on this whole earth that can allow anarchy, that can allow lawlessness in pursuit for democracy or for good governance. The situation on the ground is very clear. The police in Zimbabwe are sticking to the book, which is the constitution. The government is also stuck to the book. And we are very consistent.
He says non-profit organizations that have complained about the human rights situation and painted the government in bad light are aligned with the opposition party. He also says they push a Western agenda so they get funding to carry out their work. Muthodi also rejected allegations that the army joined police in suppressing protests. He says the army no longer is deployed on domestic issues and the police have been strengthened to handle any situation in the country. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. 21 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Ugandan authorities say the death toll from a week of floods and mudslides has risen to 36 people and left thousands stranded. And experts say deteriorating security and growing violence in the Sahel region has combined with drought to worsen the hunger crisis in the surrounding 16 countries. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. International rights groups and some U.S. politicians are calling on Nigerian authorities to immediately release opposition activist and journalist Omoyele Sowore. Nigeria's state security police arrested him Friday, just hours after a court had ordered Sowore and his co-defendant Alawali Bakari freed. They had been detained for months for allegedly calling for a rebellion against President Muhammadu Buhari. Sowore, who ran against Buhari in the February presidential election, lives with his family in the U.S. state of New Jersey. The state's senators Cory Booker and Bob Menendez condemned his rearrest. Amnesty International said that the rearrest is a sign of the Nigerian government's flagrant disregard for the rule of law. Miss South Africa was crowned Miss Universe yesterday in the U.S. city of Atlanta after a lavish ceremony filled with speeches about female empowerment. Zozibini Tunzi, 26, finished first ahead of the Puerto Rican and Mexican finalists in a flashy televised event. Tunzi earned cheers during her closing speech, a new segment of the competition in which she talked about wanting to empower young women to feel confident. Tunzi beat more than 90 contestants from around the globe in this, the 68th installment of Miss Universe. And in more award news, also yesterday, Freweni Mabratu, who dedicated her life to keeping girls in schools by designing a reusable menstrual pad and trying to end the cultural stigma around the issue, was named the 2019 CNN Hero of the Year. Freweni Mabratu, who is from Ethiopia and studied chemical engineering in the U.S., designed and patented the reusable pad in 2005. She and her team produce 750,000 of the pads a year at her factory in Ethiopia. Nearly 800,000 girls and women have benefited from her work. As the 2019 CNN Hero of the Year, Freweni Mabratu will receive $100,000 to expand her work. Today is World Anti-Corruption Day, and in Kigali, delegates have opened the International Anti-Corruption Awards Summit. The Rule of Law and Anti-Corruption Center, in partnership with Qatar, presents the annual award. Qatar's government also sponsored a monument in Kigali that represents the solidarity in the fight against graft. Eugene Wimana has more from the Rwandan capital.
The monument, an imposing steel hand made out of woven metal bars that stretches upward, has become the new symbol in Kigali in the fight against corruption. The African Union says it is urgent that governments stop corruption because it multiplies African expenditures. Moussa Faki Mahamat is the chairperson of the African Union.
Donc la question de la corruption est une préoccupation majeure.
Mohamed says the issue of corruption is a major preoccupation in Africa. If you want to build a road of $100 million, it will cost three times more because of corruption, and that hurts hopes for development on the continent. The World Economic Forum reports that globally, the cost of corruption is at least $2.6 trillion, or 5% of the world's gross domestic product. The African Union estimates that annually $50 billion is embezzled out of Africa. Rwanda's President Paul Kagame says it is possible to stop corruption if the battle starts with African leaders. Kagame has made fighting corruption a key policy in his government.
This is a campaign that can be won. Tolerating corruption is a choice, not an inevitability. It is within our power to end it. That is the most important starting point. Otherwise, it would be a waste of time for us to keep talking about it.
This year's anti-corruption celebration in Rwanda is marked with the 4th Anti-Corruption Awards Summit. The Excellence Awards for those fighting corruption is named after Qatar's Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani, who is in Kigali for the ceremony. Qatar's government says the award is meant to encourage more people to say no to corruption. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
At this ceremony this evening, former Zambian President Dr. Kenneth Kaunda was given the Lifetime Achievement Award for Fighting Corruption. Jean-Jacques Lumumba from the Democratic Republic of Congo and the Belgian group Jeunesse Musicale Internationale won for their work with youth. The organization Semi-Innovation in Uganda and Kyrgyzstan journalist Elnura Alkanova received awards for their innovative efforts to fight graft. Researchers from Cyprus and Albania won awards for their anti-corruption studies. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, 2019 has been the year of Ghanaians in the diaspora returning to their roots in their West African homeland. The year of return on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.